I'm Gabby's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Jules, what a weekend.
Incredible.
We know it's going to be a big one, but we had FA Cup semi-finals. Yeah. It's going to be a Manchester derby in the final. But what a semi-final, that Coventry game.
Wow.
We had Bayer Leverkusen extending their streak. Harry Kane scoring again for Bayern. Paris Saint-Germain against Lyon.
Come on. That?
Big women's UEFA Champions League semi-finals
as
well. But I think there's one place to start. And they call it the Clásico. For a reason.
Yes.
Real Madrid coming out 3-2 winners. Last-ditch heroics from Jude Bellingham. They haven't mathematically won the title. In reality, I think we can agree that they have.
Yeah.
Let's start with Bellingham and the comeback again. Because you had a stat for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time that Real Madrid come from behind to win. I think
it's the seventh time.
Seventh time this season in the league. They usually finish very strongly. The game, find a way of winning games late. I mean, Bellingham scored before against Celta Vigo or Getafe really late. We saw against Manchester City in the first leg, the late Valverde goal as well. And I think Valverde and Bellingham really are the two ones, probably because they have the biggest engine in midfield. They can keep running and running, and still in the 90th minute, they still have that kind of energy to be able to do what they did. Because if you look, the running from Bellingham on the third goal, I mean, I don't know how many kilometers the guy ran in the Clásico on Sunday, but to still have the energy to make that last one run on the cross from Lucas Vazquez and to finish it like that with his left foot, it's just outstanding. And people say, oh, he hadn't scored since February the 10th. He's not here to score goals. The first half of the season was an absolute freak in terms of what he provided to this team. This is what he's here for. Yeah, he will score nine again, but it's all the activity, all the freedom that he has, everything that he can bring to that team. The goals, they're great if they're there, but that's not what he's there for.
He's the second leading goal scorer in La Liga this season. And it's interesting because, you know, we've seen him. I think what he does extremely well, he does so many things very well. But one thing which really strikes me is, when you're playing against Barcelona, they have ballers in the middle of the park, even after De Jong went off.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Pedri, you've got Gundogan. And so you need his help in the middle of the park. You need his help when it's, you know, Modric and Kroos and stuff like that, when Tchouaméni is to play at the back. You need that. And so he came and he helps out there.
Yeah.
And he decides, he makes the right decisions about when to go forward and be that kind of de facto center forward.
Yeah.
And when to go back. I mean, the man has a big, big brain. It's Lampard-esque, if you will, in that sense.
Yeah, yeah, with a big engine.
On the Barcelona side, okay, Xavi on the sidelines, very, very angry. Did not get himself sent off this time.
No.
And was very measured after the game, because, oh, if I say stuff, I'll get in trouble. Unhappy with two decisions. One of them, I think the VAR ball that doesn't cross the line, there's no goal line technology in Spain.
I mean, the fact that there's no goal line technology in Spain is absolutely bonkers.
And there's no goal line technology in La Liga, and there's no automatic offside.
You know how much goal line technology costs, yeah?
And how much?
3.5 million euros to buy the license from FIFA. Do you tell me that Javier Tebas and La Liga don't have 3.5 million to spend on goal line technology for their league?
It's not just the license. I think it's also the equipment, though, right?
Yeah, but just the most expensive is to get the license, to pay 3.5 million to get that.
It's an obvious one, but the other thing...
How can you justify not having goal line technology?
Well, even cheaper, right? They have a camera on the goal line, so you can clearly see across. But obviously, if the goalkeeper's, you know, green body, in Lunin's case, is in front of it, you can't see the ball. But, hey, if we put a camera on the other side as well, like, Lunin can't be in two places at once.
That's true.
Then it's not going to be perfect. However, I did not... I don't have an issue with that. If you don't see clearly crossing the line, there's no definitive picture, you don't
know.
Right?
There's one angle where it looks like it's way in, but then you're right, it's not.
No, but that's the parallax view.
Yeah.
That's the distorted angle.
That's why. But this one looked like, if you're Barca fans, and I think a lot of them were outraged with that angle, but you don't know.
The other thing, the Cubarsi on Lucas Vazquez for the penalty, which I don't know. You can say Lucas Vazquez played for it, but...
Well, for me, it's a penalty every day.
It's a penalty, yeah.
His legs is there, like Kubas's leg. Next time he will learn to stay still and his legs with his body, not extend his leg.
But beyond that, I thought Barcelona played well.
Me too, I agree.
But it comes back to one thing, and I don't want to keep picking on him because I am a huge fan of him going forward. But Cancelo, again, I don't understand. Like, do people just make themselves... Does he have a vision problem? Like, do people make himself...
No, I think it's just concentration. I think he's just that. He's just not a defender. So if you're not a defender and you play in defense, there's a problem there coming. How can you cost four goals to your team in 5 days?
You can say he's not a defender. He's played there for the last, what, 8 years?
He doesn't have the mentality and the bearings of a defender. Because we talked about Pau Kubasi, if it's a foul or not on Lucas Vazquez. But he should not have gone to that anyway. Because Cancelo, for once, read the Lucas Vazquez dribble well. So he goes, he's in front of him, and then somehow Vazquez just goes around the other side and gets the ball back and then faces Kubasi one-on-one. I just don't understand. Because you say he's been a defender for many years now, which is true, in that in a position. But he should have learned by now. Or like, check where your forward is, check where your marking is. Which he still doesn't. He makes the same mistake that when he was at Juventus.
A Juventus, at Inter, at City.
Yeah, at Valencia.
It gives you so much going forward. And this is the part that I struggle with. If you think he's so valuable to your team, and I think he can be really valuable, I mean, at some point, does it go on to Xavi to say, all right, instead of this is not a back four, this is a 3.5, or we're going to figure out a different way of playing so that there's always somebody with him to help him out, if we think he's so valuable. In the same way that when we have a phenomenal number 10 who doesn't run, Juan Romero can.
Yeah, you adapt, yeah, I guess.
You adapt around him.
But you've said you think if Balde had been fit, Cancelo would not be playing, right?
Yes. Well, 100% he wouldn't be playing. I mean, in some games, maybe he'd be playing right back instead of Koundé or whatever, right? In fact, I really don't want to single somebody out, but it is a fact, I think, that if Balde plays against Paris Saint-Germain, I mean, maybe they make other mistakes, but I don't remember Cancelo being devastating going forward in that game either.
No, he wasn't.
That Barcelona could still be in the Champions League. And Barcelona could have at least taken a point from this Clásico. Yeah. And I think when we look back to all the injuries that, De Jong now is injured as well. Obviously, Gavi's been out Gavi's going to miss the rest of the season.
Yeah.
They've had a lot of injuries. I think Balde somehow gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. Because when somebody gets injured, a lot of it is about his replacement, right? So when things don't work out, Romero didn't get injured, but it just wasn't good. So you kind of patch it over with Christensen somehow, and Gavi goes down, but there's Pedri, Yamal comes up, blah, blah, blah. You've had all these things. But this is one guy in Balde where he goes out, and the guy who replaces him just makes these crucial mistakes in massive games.
That's massive, the two.
And I think this has really, really affected them.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I liked what I saw from Barcelona, except, in fact, Cancelo's one guy I got to pick up on. And the other one is Lewandowski, who also threw a little hissy fit when he was substituted.
I mean, 6 games in a row without scoring.
All right.
It's a lot.
And somebody out there is going to say, well, it's just frustration and striker wants to score. Like, dude, you have to be more of a leader on this team and understand the situation and understand that when was it 20 minutes ago he came off? Something like that?
Yeah.
When you act that way, you're undermining your manager and you're undermining your team on the way out. And I know some players do it and nobody likes to be substituted. But you've been in that situation before. Maybe you're not used to being substituted. Fine. Yeah. But it creates an environment of unsettled Barcelona, not in control Barcelona. Even though at that stage in the game, I'm not saying they were in control, but they were in a good position.
Yeah.
I really think it's been disappointing.
I just think there's also a problem, whether it comes from Xavi or the leaders in that team, so Gundogan, Ter Stegen, Araujo, Lewandowski, whoever, that there's a time where, okay, maybe when they were 2-1 up, they should have seen the game out. But maybe it's difficult because, as we've said, Real Madrid finished their game really strongly. Carlo has this habit this season to make his subs really late. Never, really rarely before the 71st minute, which means that the impact from those subs for the last 20 minutes or so is usually quite strong. So when you can put Brahim Diaz, for example, when you can put Joselu on, they add, I think, and that's why they finish strongly. But suddenly at 2-2, like in the first Clásico back home, you can't concede again. You see the game out, get a draw. I don't know if Xavi has to change something. I don't know if mentally those players kept attacking because they thought we're playing well here. We can go and win this 3-2, us and not them. But I think it's really bad to concede that last goal. The last goal should have never been conceded.
Other positives, I saw more from Pedri in this game than I saw before. Lamine Yamal, obviously.
Well, yeah, that was great.
Again.
But against Camavinga, which I'm not really sure that was a really good pick from Carlo, to be fair.
He's Camavinga. But you love Camavinga.
Yeah, yeah, but Mendy, when Mendy's fit, I don't understand why, how you can justify picking Camavinga ahead of Fellon Mendy at left back.
I think because Camavinga gives you more going forward, and you hope that that Mendy does. And also, I know Mendy's had a better season this year than last year when he's played, but I don't know that Mendy is Real Madrid material.
I think he's unbeaten at the Bernabeu when he plays for Real Madrid.
Yeah, Real Madrid don't often lose games at the Bernabeu.
I disagree with you. I mean, they might sell him, and I mean, Alphonso Davies is coming anyway. But I think he's been good this year, and we saw that Camavinga he can be a makeshift left back, but not against Lamine Yamal. It's just like, you know, he got done a lot of time. He got the yellow, which was a clever yellow, because it can't be a red. He's not the last defender. He's just before the giving away a penalty, but he struggled a lot of times.
Mentioned Lucas Vazquez. Want to give him some
what
more
legend.
Love. You talk about, well, we talked about actually wingers playing at fullback, right? This is a guy who, you know, breaks into the first team at Real Madrid. When he broke in, people got excited, and then eventually people were like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, he's just a good player. That's it.
He's, yeah, you know, like, he's a role player,
yeah,
right?
He's a squad player.
But then he had to accept that role, to reinvent himself, a right back when needed, kind of a, I don't want to say defensive winger, because, yeah, he knows he has to work his butt off,
yeah,
to get into the starting lineup and to be able to contribute in the way he has, because Carvajal is in his 30s now. He's not getting any younger.
Yeah.
He's had his injuries. You know, he can give you one great game and then, you know, kind of half-ass at the next. I think one of the strengths of Real Madrid is people like Lucas Vazquez, people like Nacho,
yeah,
and stuff. They rarely let you down, even though, you know, you don't want these guys starting for obvious reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's
considering the goal that the penalty that he scored at City, in that kind of environment, the pressure, juggling the ball, scoring it cleanly, and then 4 days later to put a performance like that in a Clásico is pretty amazing.
I'm a Brian Diaz guy, as you know. Part of me says, dude, you're a legit right winger. Why doesn't Carlo play you? Like, I wonder if there's... You can't do that because obviously you're not going to leave out Rodrigo. But just for balance, when he comes on, it changes everything, because you go from Valverde, who, you know, A, is playing further back anyway to begin with, and B, when he makes the runs, he always makes the same kind of runs. And you also know there's not going to be any creativity from Valverde, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to try anything difficult. I think the rehabilitation of Brahim Diaz this season, not rehabilitation,
because he's been good.
He's shown that I think he belongs at Real Madrid, and I really hope he sticks around next season, doesn't somehow get sacrificed, because balance is a thing. Balance, not every formation should be symmetrical, but balance matters. What'd you make of Vinicius?
I mean, he's decisive in a way, because he scores the penalty, he gave the assist to the Lucas Vazquez goal. This is not his best position. We know it. When he has to play a bit more central, he will have to get used to it, because when Kylian comes, this is how they're going to play. This is the team you change. Modric won't be there next season. Cruz, Camavinga, Valverde, or Cruz, Tchouaméni, you know, whoever you want there in the midfield three. Then Bellingham will have that free role that we discussed earlier. And then Kylian and Vinny will be the two front players with a lot of fluidity, with quite a lot of freedom as well. But Vinny will have to play there at times. And I've got no issue with it. We saw against City that he's getting better, making those runs from central areas into behind the defence, like he did on the Rodrigo goal at the Etihad. And yesterday, there's good moment. Yeah, if you want him more involved, then go back to a 4-3-3 and just feed him the ball all the time on the left wing. But they're never going to play like that again, I think.
Are we sure that Bellingham's still going to play that? I mean, we're projecting the future. I just wonder if maybe we aren't going to see Bellingham further back. Maybe a different setup. I don't think Carlo has ruled that out at all.
What would they change, though?
I don't want to. You could think of perhaps more of a 4-4-2, potentially.
So, but where is Bellingham in the 4-4-2? So, who are the four?
Bellingham, Tchouaméni, Kroos, and Valverde.
Oh, so a diamond midfield. Yeah, so two up front. Yeah,
you can call it a diamond, but having Bellingham...
Flat 4-4-2. Who are the four in midfield in the flat 4-4-2?
Bellingham and Tchouaméni as a base, and then you can... And then you could experiment with Rodrigo on the left.
Okay, yeah, so...
Rounding out the four, there's the option of, obviously, Camavinga on the left in the four, if you get a left back. I mean, you have...
Yeah.
In some ways, while it's suboptimal that if Mbappe arrives, you know, he plays the same natural position, if you want, as Vinicius, equally, you have a piece of clay and you have so many options. And that's why I think preseason is going to be so important for Real Madrid next season and for Carlo to figure out how these pieces fit together, because you really have an enormous amount of combinations. I wouldn't discount Brahim Diaz either. We mentioned Davies, right? If Davies comes, and again, it's looking that way, I mean, Davies is not a defensive left back, right? And you have Carvajal on the other side. How does that affect you on that side? Does Carvajal play more tucked in necessarily? Do you have Kroos in front of Davies, since Davies is going to run past them all the time?
No, Camavinga on the left, then that's perfect.
Or somebody like him.
I think the diamond midfield and the way they play now is perfect for Kylian, is perfect for the midfield they have. You can play a lot of midfielders, so you can play Valverde, Cruz, Tchouaméni, and Bellingham in that four.
You're not going to press when you do that. Or you're not going to press high anyway.
If you want to, but like it gives you so much balance, and way you occupy the pitch is so nicely done. For me, it's even... He chose that this season because they've known for a long time that Kylian was coming.
Over to Barcelona, when we look at this, I don't say the season's over, but it kind of is over. Because I don't think it makes any difference if they finish second or third. I think they'll finish second anyway.
Yeah.
Although you don't know where impressive is, we'll see later.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you kind of reset and reload from? Because you've got the issue with the manager.
Yeah.
Where
do you even go? So do you go Rafa Márquez, which seems to be in right now?
A cheap and cheerful option.
Because you have no money, or because you really think that he's a good manager and can do a job there? Because he knows the club?
He knows the club. I interviewed him once years ago when he was still a player, and I was not particularly...
Impressed
at all.
Yeah.
And it was that Rafa Márquez, not the other Rafa Márquez, who also played for Mexico. Again, I don't watch Barcelona B. I'm not in a position to kind of judge where that goes. I think the difficulty is, if you start with Rafa Márquez and things don't work out, you've really sent the message that, you know, we don't have a pot to go to the toilet in. The Lewandowski situation, you can sit around and he's got a year left. You can sit around and, you know, maybe hope that suddenly he wants to experience Neom in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
That would work out well for him.
Yeah.
If not, I think you're going to have an issue there, because I think handling the transition from Lewandowski to Vitor Roque, assuming that's your center forward, I don't think that's going to be easy. Gundogan's going to be a year older and probably just as outspoken as before. And while he brings so many good things, and like I don't always agree with him. As a journalist, I appreciate him being outspoken. Sometimes at Barcelona, just the way, because of the nature of the club in this difficult situation, from Laporta's perspective, it's not always a good thing to have. You generally want people singing from the same hymn sheet. Gavi will be back. That's a plus. Lamine Yamal's back. I go back to this. João Félix, if you want to keep him, you go to him and you say, we have to find some sort of solution here. But he has that big contract extension with Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
I don't see how he can, even if he cuts a salary, I don't see how he can cut back. Because essentially, okay, amortization, that word again.
Yeah.
It's costing Atletico Madrid millions to have him play for Barcelona.
For them, it's not a good idea.
No, it's not good for them. Rafinha is somebody that assuming Lewandowski stays, Rafinha is the other guy you can get money for, but is he really somebody you want to move on?
I don't think so.
Ansu Fati will be back.
Yeah.
You loan him out again? there's just so many questions. And the guy who, you know, there's positive. Kubarsi is a positive. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, of course.
Fermin Lopez, I think, is a positive. Although I met so many Barcelona fans who tell me, oh, yeah, he's great, but he's a squad player. He'll never start for this team, right? You know, unless people are injured. Okay, fine. I guess Pablo Torre will be back. He hasn't done great things this year, but, you know, he's a player anyway. It's a tough situation, and what would worry me is Deco's the guy making the Deco Laporta, the guy who's driving the bus.
Yeah.
On the technical side.
And that's what maybe they're struggling with, who can come next outside of Rafa Marquez. Because if you Deserbi, really, or Tuchel, do you go to that mess? Do you go to, despite all the great young players they have coming through, La Masia's, well, everything you want, the rest, even financially, can they afford any new signing this summer? Do they just have to sell and try to reinvest that money? I don't know. It's just, it doesn't look that appealing and attractive.
What if you push your chips to the middle of the table and take Micho from Girona? You wouldn't have to move house?
No. True. He's next door.
You know. The Girona fans, who many of them are Barcelona fans.
They'll be okay with that.
I just think at some point, you're going to have to think outside the box, because if you believe that you have a transformational manager, right, somebody that's worth chucking money at, who can make you make that leap, that guy is going to want control and resources and a say and a budget. And if you bring in a Tuchel and you're like, oh, yeah, but look, Leva's gone because he's got a year left, wants a new contract, he's not happy. Or, you know, or well, look, we've had to sell Rafinha and João Félix is, you know, like, it gets really, really difficult.
Yeah.
I think this is a big, big summer ahead for Barcelona. All right, enough Clásico. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United somehow let a 3-goal lead slip against Coventry in, what, the final 20 minutes? Coventry also have a goal disallowed for the tightest of offsides. It's 3-3 going into extra time. Then Coventry have several more chances in extra time.
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes also hits a woodwork. It goes to penalty. Casemiro misses his. And then Erik ten Hag telepathically
from
the bench.
So we saw
it all around.
Yeah.
And we have a Manchester derby in the FA Cup final.
Again, for the second season in a row. So we never had one before in the Cup final. And then we have two in 2 years. I mean, I know that for an hour, United controlled this game. And rightly, I mean, they are a Premier League team, one of the biggest clubs in the world, against Coventry, who are eighth in the Championship, right?
Right.
So you expected them
unlikely to reach the playoffs.
Yeah. So you expected them to be better than them, and they were for an hour. And then, which I think sums up well this season for United and for Ten Hag, who is, as we've said, a shambles. The last half hour, or even the last hour, if you add extra time, because for most of it, Coventry were on top. It's just an embarrassment from a United point of view, because there's no leadership, neither from the pitch or from the bench, from Ten Hag or from Casemiro, from Maguire, from Bruno, from anyone, really. So when Coventry score one goal, you're thinking, okay, surely they can't. Surely United are not going to say, okay, let's control, let's keep the ball for a long period of time, let's not put ourselves under pressure, let's not expose ourselves. You would think that Ten Hag would say the same, and what do? It's literally open door. It's like it's like a kid's game. It looks like a kid's game. And United played like an under 15 team that has no knowledge of tactics, how to see out a game, how to control a game. It was just like, literally, it was incredible.
I think Casemiro had one of the worst games of his career. And, you know, you can blame him. He is supposed to be the leader out there, obviously. Force a deputize at center.
Yeah, they have five.
I'm not going to blame Bruno, because ultimately, when you look at it after a game, the good things that come from United generally come from Bruno. Could he do more? I don't know. I don't know why. Yes, of course. Everybody can do more. But let down by Rashford. Not let down by Maguire within his limits of all the Maguire limitations. Wan-Bissaka, again, I don't want to hear about what a brilliant one-on-one defender he is. Kobbie Mainoo's not going to have a good game every week because he's 18. Did not have a good game.
No.
Eriksen, after he came on, what was the point? What's the purpose of putting this guy on? Are you putting one of the no-names for the debut, right?
He never plays, so...
Garnacho, again, not going through a good period. Antony, I'm going to leave. I mean, That was, I mean, we're talking about after minute 70, right?
Yeah. For an hour, they were okay.
So, so disappointing, I think. And, you know, people say it's a defeat. It's just a win that feels like a defeat.
Well,
I think that's how people are going to remember.
And you see the celebration when Hoyland scored the winning penalty and he goes and celebrates on his own, then turns around. Nobody's there. Nobody. You know, usually when you win a penalty, everybody runs and you, like, jump on your keeper if he saved it. The United players were so embarrassed.
We can credit the United players for reading the room.
Yeah, exactly. Well, apart from Anthony, who obviously trolled the poor Coventry players on the pitch, which is like, come on.
Why would you
troll them? Why would you take the mickey out of them?
This guy's rapidly becoming my least favorite player. I don't know if he's just an idiot or if he's just a bad person.
I don't know, man.
But seriously.
I don't know. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe, obviously, who owns some shares at United, is 71 now. And on yesterday morning, before going to Wembley, he ran the London Marathon in 4 hours and 32 minutes. If you gave him truth serum this morning and asked him why Ten Hag was still in charge, what would he say?
First of all, he ran it really, really fast.
Amazing.
That's
well
an amazing
done, Sir Jim.
Time at well that done. Age. I guess he was in a hurry to make sure he got to Wembley.
Yeah.
Well done there. What would he say? He would say that, what's the point of sacking him now? I think is the reality of what he would say. And Ted Hag would say that, I saw this quote from him. They said he was only able to play his best lineup twice in the past 18 months.
I've had enough of that.
It's true. Fine.
Okay.
But this is not a reason for you to keep your job, frankly. And I would believe the manager search has begun. But let me remind everybody, Jim controls the football side. The Glazers control the money side. And it takes money to sack managers and to bring in new ones. United will play Manchester City in the final, Jules, just like last season. Erling Haaland was injured, but a late Bernardo Silva goal sent them past Chelsea.
Yeah, one of the worst performances from City this season, maybe on par with the one Aston Villa when they lost in the league. At the end of 2023, just not good, tired, no inspiration, no Erling Haaland, who was injured, Foden wide again, which, as we've said many million times, takes away a lot of his game. And they were there for the taking, and Chelsea could have got them. It's a shame for Chelsea that their chances ended. Went to Nico Jackson, who is not a finisher, obviously. And then in the end, you get punished because you miss your chances. It's a shame for Chelsea because they were the better team. It's just the way it is.
We saw City winning ugly, which is a side. I think it shows though that they have another dimension to be able to get back together after the disappointment. And all that said, Grealish, should that have been a penalty?
I thought so, but everybody seems to disagree with me.
I don't know what they're disagreeing on. I'm with you. 100% penalty.
Pep Guardiola was also furious after the game, Gabby, and said that it was unacceptable that City had to play on Saturday, just 72 hours after their game against Real Madrid that went to extra time and penalties.
Yeah, and look, I think there's no viable reason I can think of why they didn't play on Sunday other than some TV contract thing between the rights holders, right? That's the only possible reason?
I think so. But then they play on Thursday when Arsenal would have played Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday because they played Tuesday at Chelsea. So I think Arteta has probably even more reason to scream and complain than Guardiola has.
What I would say about Pep, but when we keep bringing up the health of the players, use your substitutions. He almost never uses five subs. Yeah. Most managers do it. They're 3-0 up. He keeps the same people up there. What do you want?
Yeah.
Arsenal go top of the Premier League after gutting out a 2-0 win away to Wolves. Jules, you called it. You said they would come back against Wolves.
Yeah,
it was 3 points.
I know. It was not great, but I guess right now all that matters is that you win, regardless of how you score. If you score with like a weird shot from Trossard, with his toe poke, with his laces, not really sure how he got in the top corner, and a late one from Odegaard. But you won, and that's the most important. You're back at the top of the table, you and Liverpool, and you put a bit of pressure on City, who obviously have a game in hand now, but still, you prefer to have the points on the board.
You know, if they lost, the narrative would have been, oh, they're too young, too inexperienced, blah, blah, blah. Good for them.
They show character. You're right, I agree. And Jurgen Klopp makes 5 changes from the side that faced Atalanta on Thursday, and Liverpool win 3-1 away at Fulham to match Arsenal and go level at the top of the table. Was he taking a gamble? Are you happy with Salah and Darwin on the bench and McAllister?
I am very happy with it because the reality is he put his team's fitness first, and I think it's really difficult to win the league with 12 men or 13 men.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is he's going to need all of those guys at some point. They were fresher. They were motivated. You still have the other people on the bench. Fulham, I think, have had an okay spell, but it's still Fulham.
Yeah.
And I think now he knows that he can count on these people. And by the way, you said some mean things about Ryan Gravenberch when we were talking about our upcoming Gab and Jules ESPN draft for to the players born in 2002. And I'm glad he scored that final.
Yeah, I thought of you when I saw him score.
Thank you. Kylian Mbappe and Ousmane Dembele take the night
off. Come
on. Not for the first time. But it's okay. It's only John Texter's Lyon they're playing. And they're 4-1 up at halftime.
So we talked about Pierre Sage, you know, the Lyon manager, or Stone Wise, as we call him. And we praised him because in 2024, Lyon had won more points than anybody else in Ligue 1, even PSG. But he goes to the Parc des Princes, wants to play 4-2-3-1, and it's just... And he gets destroyed, and it can happen. He's learning. He made a mistake. That happens to even the top managers. We've said that before. So this was a proper spanking. Like, literally, PSG wiped the floor with them. They will meet each other again in the cup final at the end of May for the last game of the season. So let's hope that by then, Stone Wise and his players will approach the game differently, because on Sunday, it was just not the right tactics, which is okay. But PSG were outstanding.
By the way, Vitinha...
So good.
He's in fuego. Is he? Okay, I know. I'm only ask you if I ask you if you see Paris Saint Germain's best midfielder, you're gonna say no because it's Warren Zaire.
Oh, of course. Well,
for me right now, it's Vitinha. Oh, little Vitinha.
Yeah.
Big Vitinha still stinks.
Yeah. Josip Stanisic pops up in the 8th minute of injury time to give Bayer Leverkusen a 1-1 draw. Where Borussia Dortmund gab 45 games unbeaten, 9 in all competition. 3 more, and they will match Benfica's records.
That's right. So they've matched Reka and Dinamo Zagreb for some reason. I guess this is very big in Croatia, having long unbeaten runs in all competitions. The record is 48. Looking at their upcoming games, it's a tough run. Stuttgart at home, Roma away, Eintracht away, and Roma at home.
And then potential final as well of the Europa League.
Right, but at that point, they will have beaten the record.
But still.
Aston Villa come from behind to beat Bournemouth 3-1. Jules, Ollie Watkins does not score, but he's once again devastating.
Yeah, and you know, I was at the Premier League on Friday night to do one of their shows, and we talked about Watkins, and rightly so, how amazing he'd been scoring goals. And I said, but I think what people really forget or don't talk enough about is the assist, because he's the only player in the Premier League this season with at least double digit for goals and assists. Nobody else has. He had 10 assists before Sunday on top of his 18 goals or something. And he added 2 more assists in that game. Okay, the second one is a shot that then got pushed over the line. But the first assist for Diaby is amazing. It's good. It's such an amazing player. And for me, there's not even a debate. He will go to the Euros. He has to go more than Tony, more than Solanke, more than any else we want behind Harry Kane. So, incredible season.
You know, it's funny because I know the guy who scouted him when he was for Brentford.
Oh, yeah.
He was at Exeter. And he always reminds me of this and the fact that he didn't get any kind of bonus or anything.
Oh, no, man.
But, yeah.
It's the life of a scout. Everton beat Nottingham Forest 2-0 in a relegation 6-pointer gap. But the reason we're talking about this is the incredible statement that Forest put out after the game on social media.
Yeah, it's plain and simple. They wrote, 3 extremely poor decisions, 3 penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Nottingham Forest Football Club will now consider its options.
Okay, there's no options to consider, Nottingham Forest. Well, what are you going to do?
Get lawyers in. You can always turn to lawyers because, as you know, do I need to repeat
is that
to
your
you?
Option? Is that their options, lawyers?
I presume so. I don't know what other options they have.
Well, what are they going to do? What are lawyers going to do in this? Nothing. There's nothing they can do.
I watched BBC's Match of the Day last night, which is the flagship program here in the UK. They talked about this, but they never mentioned the name of the VAR, which is kind of silly because it's a name. It's in public record. The VAR was Stuart Atwell. Stuart Atwell is a Luton fan.
Okay.
A couple of things about them. About this. If they did complain about Atwell before the game, there's 2 ways you can look at it. One is the reason we had a whole Calciopoli scandal in Italy is because certain clubs would veto certain referees before the match. I'm not okay with that.
No.
You have a group of referees and you accept it. Doesn't matter if he's a Luton fan or whatever. You trust Howard Webb to make appointments.
Of course.
If you're not happy at the end of the season, you fire Howard Webb.
Yeah.
But you can't demand stuff like this, I think. That said, and people are making fun of them. Crystal Palace had a tweet kind of trolling them, whatever. I thought these were really poor decisions. I thought Ashley Young is 100% a penalty.
Oh, yeah, come on.
The Reyna one, he does dive. He does put down a standing foot. There is contact. I don't have an issue with that. The third one, 100% a penalty.
Yeah.
And
two out of three for sure.
Two out of 300%. Forrest have had bad luck with referees this season. And what I will say, I would hate to think that Atwell didn't intervene the VAR because the referee in this game is a high profile.
That, I think they picked on Tony Taylor because he's one of the best, right?
He's like, oh, well, Ant wouldn't get that wrong. Well, maybe Ant sometimes needs help. So let him see it, right? I think that's what happened in this. I'm going to give Atwell the benefit of the doubt. And this goes back to my old point. Being a VAR and being a referee, two different skills. Stop using, I mean, not stop using, you don't have a choice now, but you have to prepare the next generation of VARs as specialists in VARs.
Yeah.
Go pick them from League 1 and League 2 referees, teach them how to do it and see which ones are good, and then let them do it.
And the thing on Luton, by the way, is that a draw would have been a better result for Luton than one of those two teams winning, by the way. So if Atwell, as a Luton fan, would have wanted a good result for his club, it's a draw, not an Everton win or a Forest win.
Yeah, people have pointed that out. I don't know. By the way, Ashley Young.
Yeah, as well. He could not help himself.
Well, what did he do?
A bit of trolling, you know.
Stream Spotify, song of the day, Crime River. Yeah, exactly. Like Ashley,
you know, Crime River. We should know better. Forest.
Bayern win 5-1 away to Union Berlin as Thomas Tuchel makes a bunch of changes and Harry Kane scores again. Jules, did you learn anything?
So I thought of you because Mathys Tel, you said the other day Mathys Tel should start every game between now and the end of the season. And he scored a great goal again, and I thought it was really good. And with Gnabry and Coman out, with Sané not fully fit, I thought Gabby's right once more.
Thank you.
And I think Tel, for everything he's done this season, all the goals that he's got as a super sub coming on, I think he deserves to have more game time now, and I hope he will be given it.
It's funny that when everybody gets rested or people are injured and so on, Eric Dier still starts and plays 90 minutes.
This was way back on Friday, but Juventus came from two goals down to draw away Cagliari 2-2. Signs of life from Max Allegri?
No, because they were absolutely terrible. In
so
the first
bad.
Half. This is one of the worst, I think, 45 minutes that I've seen from Juve this year.
It was embarrassing.
Now, they do get back into it. They could have easily lost this game, too. I feel like I'm saying the same things every week. There is a complete, I think, sense of drift with these players right now. And Allegri can shout and wave his arms and motivate them. And look, Allegri needs to be held to account. He's the highest paid manager in Serie A. He's one of the highest paid managers in Europe.
Yep.
He's wrong for this team, in my opinion.
Yep.
And if they can find a way to send him packing, they should. But equally, I think a lot of the players should show more pride in the shirt. They did a little bit in the second half. Not enough. West Ham go 4-0 down away to Crystal Palace inside a half an hour and end up losing 5-2.
Wow.
David Moyes did not make too many excuses despite the fact that his game team played on Thursday. In fact, he was extremely apologetic afterwards. Are you still going to be mean, Jules?
I mean, David, it's time to go, my friend, now. Thank you for everything that you did for West Ham. Thank you for the European trophy. Thank you for finishing high in the table, as high as possible. This can't continue now. It's just not. This is not. I don't think he's adapted for this team, for some of those players. I don't think he's good for the Premier League anymore. I think he's done his time. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. Prehistorical football. It's ancient times football. I've got no time for him, no time for his style of football. I don't think that West Ham have time. The fans have half time for him either anymore. I don't think he's a Premier League manager full stop anymore either. And this was such a perfect example of one guy, Glasner at Palace, who is not perfect by far, and is not a Pep Guardiola 2.0.
And who took over mid-season. Not just that, but from Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, from Hodgson, you're right. But has just that mentality of trying to be proactive, trying to make things happen with players who are good playing football. David Moyes, the dinosaur, is the opposite.
I think you're being a bit mean to Moyes.
Yeah, in which way?
Well, I just think there's a lot of worse managers out there. I do take your points, but if you're a club and you base yourself on results, the results are there. They're what? They're top eight in the table, right?
Ninth, yeah.
They reach a quarterfinal.
They
lose to a team that, by the way, in that first half against Bayer Leverkusen, you know, they could have scored more. Yeah. They could have. So all these things together, I think they get to the results. Now, is it in line with his resources? Can they do better if they want to be ambitious? Could they move up the ranks with Moyes? Probably not. He's probably at the ceiling. Just be careful what you wish for.
I think you can finish eighth playing much better football than what they do.
Yeah, with a different manager.
Yeah.
But you can also finish 15th. That's the thing.
You can finish 15th with Moyes. That happened before with Moyes at West Ham. So, Atletico Madrid lose at Alaves 2-0 as Diego Simeone comes up against his other son, Giuliano. Gab, this was big, though.
I love how all of Simeone's kids have Italian names. Of course. Obviously, Giuliano, I hope he doesn't get annoyed, but most people know Giovanni Simeone,
yeah.
Who, of course, he's plays for Napoli, brother, what? Yeah. And is better, probably better. I mean, yeah, better.
The youngest one is supposed to be the best, no?
I'm not familiar with the youngest one,
yeah.
But this is Giuliano, who's had a lot of injuries. He's more of a winger type. Played well. The upshot here is that Atletico Madrid, again, self-destructed. It's like they took all the bad karma from the Dortmund game with them. Now the gap is just 3 points. They face Athletic Bilbao on Saturday.
We only drew
this week. Fifth.
Yeah.
It is at the Civitas Metropolitano, where Atletico obviously have this very good home record. But you know what? They're definitely on the slide. I mean, this is kind of backs against the wall stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
A deal between the Football Association and the Premier League means there will be no more replays in the FA Cup duels. This has absolutely infuriated lower division clubs. What's your take?
I can understand why they're not happy, obviously. I've said it before, I will say it again. Replays in this day and age should be scrapped. The season is too heavy already for whatever player, Premier League players, Championship, League 1, League 2, etc. They play too many games. You don't need replays. And this replays is a thing of the past, really. It's the thing of the 80s, 90s, if you want, and that's it. There's other ways that you can compensate financially those clubs. For example, I'm not saying that in France it's perfect. But for example, if there's at least two divisions between the two teams facing each other, you would play at the team in the lowest ranked team.
Right.
So at least they can keep all the money. Maybe if you play a Premier League club, that Premier League club gives you the ticket receipt and the ticket money and all of that. There's other way for those lower league teams to still make money even if they miss out on replays. But replays, for me, you can't just add another game, another day. Imagine, so there's what, 7 rounds to go to the final to win the FA Cup? What, you could have 6 replays? You could play 6 extra games in the season.
Well, not the Premier League teams, but the lower division teams, right? Because the Premier League only come in third round.
Yeah, so probably you have 4 rounds, right?
Right.
So still, it's just I just don't think in the current day and age of football that replays are right.
What I don't understand is, so this is a deal between the Premier League. There's a bunch of things here I don't understand. First of all, the Football League clubs say they were not consulted.
Yeah, that's wrong.
It's wrong, but equally, the FA are supposed to be their representatives, right? Yeah. It's the FA run the club.
Yeah.
So bear that in mind. I mean, obviously, I think that comes into it too. The other thing is, why did they scrap the replays from the first round? That's the part I don't understand. The Premier League clubs are not involved in the first two rounds. Why couldn't you keep them if they really want to do this? What I don't like is that how much of this is about money, because you brought up money there, like financially compensating them.
That's why those clubs are saying, the lower league clubs.
Well, I find that a bit sad.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? Ultimately, I'm going to complicate this for football, but this is a business where 70 to 80% of your costs are player costs. Just freaking live within your means. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, we're a community club, we're so important to the community. Yeah, okay. You're so important to the community. You don't need to have a left back making $3,000 a week in League Two, a reserve left back, to be important in the community.
Yeah.
Right? If you serve up something good, you serve up something good. The other point, and the reason they want to do this is obviously the replay. You know, what happens is Manchester United go and play somebody from League Two. It finishes 1-1, so it goes to a replay. Then suddenly they're Old Trafford, and then they get all this money in, which they say they can spend to invest in the club. And some of your financial solutions might address that. But more importantly, what about the sporting side? Do we not care about the sporting side? Because if you like upsets and the magic of the cup and all this stuff, it's far more likely that, you know, Rotherham are going to beat Manchester City in one leg than with a replay.
Yeah.
Far more likely.
Definitely.
So we should see more upsets. I don't know. I kind of feel, with all the love and respect for the Football League, part of it is also, if you look at especially clubs in the Championship, how much money they're losing, it's not been enough financial oversight. And if you can't, and clubs are going bust, and we've seen clubs mismanaged, and do I need to bring up Dai Young and Reading and producer Freddie again? If you're not going to run yourself properly, then why should others pick up the tab for you?
Yeah, that's true.
Give yourself rules first. Show that you can be grown-ups.
Napoli lose away to Empoli 1-0, and Champions League football is looking increasingly unlikely. Gab, what happens next?
I think what happens next is Victor Osimhen lives in the summer. I don't see how he stays. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. Yeah, sure. Who needs a center forward out there? Augie keeps telling me that the United scouts, a lot of them are not impressed with him. They're like, oh, Lukaku 2.0 and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, go and have a giggle about it. But please realize that you have one center forward and his backup is Anthony Martial, who is a virtual footballer right now, right?
Well.
And leaving. I don't know how much of a market there's going to be for him. De Laurentiis keeps getting linked to Antonio Conte. I don't see this making any sense. Is this going to end really badly?
Yeah.
I mean, they might win something and then have it end badly, but it's going to end really badly. So there is a bit of a sense of drift. And again, it's sad what this club came to. But ultimately, if you have a part-time manager, as they do now with Chicho Calzona, kind of like, what do you expect?
That's true.
Stuttgart lose at Werder Bremen 2-1, and our boy Serhou Guirassy does not score, Jules.
No.
Still third place. Nothing to be stiffed at.
No, and to be fair, there are chances. They could have at least got a draw, I thought, in that game. They played well at times, and Undav scored late. They went down. They made a couple of mistakes. They gave away a penalty quite cheaply. So they're still going to finish in that top four. It's still a remarkable season. But it also shows that when our boy Serhou doesn't score, they don't win. It's as simple as that. Girona beat up Cadiz 4-1 at home and have secured their place in Europe for the first time in the club history. They even had those t-shirts. Did you see?
Like, yeah.
That was lovely. Gab, you will no doubt want to talk about Artem Dovbyk.
I will, but it's funny. This is about the t-shirts first. Like, are they going to make other t-shirts from when they've mathematically secured their spot in the
Champions
Europa League?
League?
And then another one for when they mathematically secure their spot in
the Champions League? No, I think they might wait for the Champions League if he's secured and then have another t-shirt or cap.
A lot of t-shirts out there.
True, love
but no, look, a tremendous. I want to talk about Dovbyk. I also want to mention, since you love your Tigers, how about that assist from Gutierrez for the Ivan Martin goal?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen this, go on YouTube.
There's some great stuff in La Liga this weekend.
It's filthy, I think, is what the kids call it. But Dovbyk, you made fun of Dovbyk for the chances he missed last week. Guess what? He's the Pichichi. He's still the Pichichi.
He is.
And I'm fascinated by this race for the Pichichi between so many unlikely people, right? So Dovbyk, he scored a ton of goals at Dnipro last year. But, you know, the guy's 26. It's not like he's 21 years old.
Sure.
Before that, he never scored a lot of goals. Jude Bellingham is behind him. Dovbyk is 18. Bellingham is 17. And, of course, we talked about him. Not a center forward. Ante Budimir, when did he become a scoring machine? He's on 16.
Yeah.
Borja Mayoral, remember the man that Mourinho didn't want and so on? He's on 15. He'd have more if not for the fact that he's injured. And
yeah.
The season, I think, is pretty much over at this stage. And then the other guy is the only living Sorloth in captivity.
Favorite.
Who I have a feeling we might mention again. So
yeah.
I'm loving this race. Who's your money on? Dovbyk, Bellingham, Budimir, or Sorloth?
Surely Dovbyk.
Surely?
Win it. Yeah, so and it would be the first time that a player not from Real Madrid or Barcelona, if it's him and not Bellingham, that was the Pichichi for a very long time.
I think since Dani Guisa was the last one to do it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Was that Mallorca, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Monaco score either side of the break to beat Brest, which is a body part. There
of
you
course.
Go. Say it again. Away from home, and they leapfrog them into second place in the table. Jules, they've lost just once in the past 3 months. Although the results, some good, some not so good. Is Adi Hütter getting the hang of this?
It was a very professional win, I thought, on Sunday, despite being without Golovin, for example, despite two late red cards. Zakaria scored an amazing goal. They looked really solid with the back three. They decided to play deeper and play on the counter with Balogun up front, who was really a handful for the Brest defense.
Can I say something about Hütter here? You know, Adolf. You're supposed to be Mr. Excitement, blah, blah, blah. You're playing freaking Brest. And you're telling me, oh, let's play deeper. Let's play on the counter against Brest.
I know, but then when I
Golovin on his own makes more money than the entire Brest wage bill. I know,
but Brest have been only PSG have won at Brest this season. They Monaco have played really good and entertaining football for most of the season. I just think they adapted to the opposition. This time, even Eric Roy, the Brest manager, said it after the game. So, like, well, it was difficult for us once they decided to play like that, that tactic. It was hard for us, but it's good. And also, this race for second, third, and fourth, Lille are just a 2 points behind Brest now. And we have Monaco-Lille on Wednesday. We have Monaco-Lyon on Sunday. Lille will also play Brest. So it's going to be amazing, really, behind PSG, because PSG can be champions on Wednesday. But behind them, it will be pretty exciting until the end. Inter face Milan in the Derby della Madonnina tonight on Monday night with a chance to seal the Serie A title. But Gab, the best news for them comes off the pitch.
Yeah, Corriere della Sera, which dare I say is they like to think of themselves as Italy's New York Times, reported that everything is set. They got that 400 million euro loan from a company called PIMCO, which is based here in London. It's at a 12% interest rate, which is not terrible given interest rates are higher these days. That means that they can take that money and they can repay Oaktree.
Yeah,
because of course, if
we didn't have that loan, yeah.
If they hadn't repaid that, then they would have defaulted and Oaktree would have taken over the club. Look, it's revolving debt at this time, but exactly. Steven Jiang says, no, I got this. We're getting stronger. We're getting better. We'll find our way out of this at some point. I am not selling the club. So at least I'll have some security.
Oh, good for him.
Let's talk Women's Champions League, Jules. Chelsea and Emma Haynes made history beating Barcelona 1-0 away thanks to an Aaron Cuthbert goal. It's the first home defeat for Barcelona in more than five years.
I think it's 82 games or 84 games, Gab, in a row for Barcelona, where they have always scored and this time they can't score. Masterclass tactically, I thought, from Chelsea, from Emma Hayes, of course, but also the plan. It's great to have a plan and everybody has a plan, but the way the players executed it, the way Cuthbert took a goal, I mean, I thought this season she's been incredible for them. When you think she's only 25 and still had probably her best years ahead of her, to see her playing at that level and consistently providing performances, goals, key moments is exceptional. And this is the two best teams in Europe for not just this season, but for the last few seasons. The other semi-final is PSG against Lyon, who are clearly slightly below that level, I think. But that was a fantastic game of football.
Yeah, well done, Cuthbert. Clearly no fallout after that mean Mr. Eidevold.
Oh, here we go. I knew we were going to send that. The only living Soloth in captivity, we mentioned him a little bit before, but scores an injury time winner to give Villarreal a 2-1 win away to Almeria. Gab, this was doubly special for him.
It was because he wasn't supposed to be there because his partner or wife or whoever she is, or girlfriend, was supposed to give him his first child, or their first child. Instead, he chose to play because big game for Villarreal, and he scored. And look, given
the celebration was lovely.
Villarreal have been not good this year, I think it's safe to say. The fact that you score this many goals, I don't know. Maybe there's more than one tall Norwegian center forward.
But can they play together for the national team?
I'll tell you what. I think if he scores another five goals between the end of the season, he will have caught up with the other one, the famous one.
Yeah, but the other one might score more.
More Women's Champions League. And Jules, I have to apologize in advance that I'm even bringing this up. How did Paris Saint-Germain manage to let a two-goal lead slip to lose 3-2 to Lyon, who scored three times in the last 10 minutes? Now, this game was on Saturday, I believe.
Yesterday afternoon.
Is it possible that Erik ten Hag snuck out of the Manchester United training camp to go and give Paris Saint-Germain some advice?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did that, seeing how shambolic he is. I mean, incredible game, because PSG had chances to go 3-0 up and Katoto could have had a hat-trick. It was a very open game.
Katoto scored both goals.
Yeah, she scored two goals. She could have had a third. It was very open, even at 0-0, 1-0, 2-0. So watching it, you kind of knew that Lyon could score at any time.
And Lyon missing their best striker as well.
Yeah, so Lusomer was injured. Egerberg was only on the bench. But Diani, who used to play for PSG, who's Paris born and bred herself.
Before she decided to become Benedict Arnold and betray the cause.
Well, you know, she was a free agent. She decided to go to the biggest club in France. I can understand that. But you also knew that she'd probably come back and haunt us, and she did, because she scored. Some goals were good. Some goals were poor defensively from a PSG point of view. But hey, 3-2, there's a second leg in Paris on Sunday, where at the Parc des Princes, which is going to be rocking for the girls. So they can do it. They showed for 70 minutes, 75 minutes, how good they could be, even away at the Groupama Stadium in Lyon in front of 40,000 fans. They can do it again in Paris, there's no doubt. So let's keep the faith, really. The final 11 minutes, Gab, of Roma's game against Udinese, that was stopped for Evan Ndika last week, will be played on Thursday. And guess what? The match will finish with a different manager than the one that started it.
That's right. Cioffi, the Udinese manager, he was sacked after they lost to Verona 1-0. He's right on the verge of the relegation zone. Interestingly enough, he's going to be replaced by Fabio Cannavaro, former Ballon d'Or winner. Fabio Cannavaro, help me out here. Is he the only Ballon d'Or managing in the top flight? Is there anybody else that we can think of? It should be. We have to think back to before the Cristiano Messi era, right?
I think you're right.
There may be somebody we're forgetting, but I thought this is pretty cool.
Should not be allowed for Cannavaro to be the match. It's like if you have a suspended player.
You know, so what, you got to bring Cioffi back? Who's
No, but just an assistant or somebody who was on the team sheet for the first game.
I have to see.
Has to be the coach.
I am assuming Cannavaro will be this. I don't know. It's only 11 minutes. This seems very pedantic from you, Jules. But
no, but it's
we like pedantry in Italy, so maybe he's not allowed to actually be on the bench.
I don't know.
Maybe he can sit in the stands with his mobile phone. I don't know. They're only going to play 11 minutes. That game was, of course, 1-1. Roma, by the way, are absolutely furious about it. They wanted this game finished in like mid-May after they play their semifinals against Bayer Leverkusen in the UEFA Cup. I can understand their perspective, but guys, and obviously in Paris, in France, as we saw with Ligue 1, like canceling matches so you can prepare for a Champions League game, that's probably what they would have done. But equally, Udinese, they need to know if they're going to get their point or not, because they've got high stakes as well.
And for sure.
And for the integrity of the league, there's a good argument to go and finish this game now. It's only 11 minutes.
Yeah.
Deal with it. Jules, and the other thing is, a point, not a bad result for both teams. So I'm not suggesting anything.
No, but it could be the most boring 11 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Jules, we'll finally get some Paris derbies next year. Red Star Paris have been promoted to the French second division. Well, the only question is whether they'll face Paris FC next year, or, since Paris FC can still get promoted, whether it will be Paris FC against Paris Saint-Germain.
You're right. I think it's a big task for Paris FC to get promoted to Ligue 1, because the playoffs are difficult, and then you still have to play the third team. So the team that finished 16th in Ligue 1 is complicated. It's not impossible, but it's complicated. So I think most likely we will have Red Star against Paris FC in Ligue 2 next season. Where the two clubs are based is actually not too far from each other. If you go alongside the Périphérique, it's amazing.
If you go alongside the Périphérique, you pass the Parc des Princes as well.
Yeah, but it's not. Parc des Princes is on the other side. They are both on the east side. Right. Parc des Princes is on the west side. The Dutch FA have hit Vitesse Arnhem with an 18-point penalty, Gab, which means that the point tally this season goes down to -1. And they will be obviously relegated. The investigation prompted by a leak called the Oligarch Files, found that they lied about their links to Roman Abramovich.
Yeah, so the Dutch FA actually investigated them three times in the last 15 years. Twice, Vitesse Arnhem, you know, they weren't able to prosecute them.
Yeah.
All those years when Chelsea players were just surfaced.
Going on loan, all of them. Mason Mount was there.
At Vitesse Arnhem and come back and so on. According to what appears in the Oligarch Files, Roman Abramovich was behind the club, financed them to the tune of more than 100 million euros. Now, this is not strictly speaking illegal,
right?
Because it's multi-club ownership. Hey, look, you know, like Manchester City do. Except Manchester City say, we own Palermo and we own New York City FC and Melbourne and whatever the nonsense they own. And that stupid club in Belgium is Lommel. That they own, right? The difference is this was all hidden away and offshore, and they lied about it. They lied, and they must have had their reasons for it. On top of that, I think this was also aggravated by the fact that the links continued to be there after Abramovich was sanctioned by the European Union following the start of the war in Ukraine. So, yeah, it's sad for the club to go this way, and I think you have to ask serious questions of the people who were in charge, because ultimately, who loses out? It's not like the Vitesse fans were like, oh, look, we got to see a very young Mason Mount here. Isn't this great?
Yeah.
Ultimately, there's fans who've supported the club for a long time, and they're still there once all these bad dudes are gone. Back to the drawing board for Bayern, Jules. Julian Nagelsmann has extended his contract with the German national team until 2026. Are you a bit surprised?
Well, not really.
I am surprised. I am really surprised.
Are you? Well, I don't know, because clearly now he seems to have gone the momentum is with him, with Germany. And I know you said the other day they can have a terrible Euros. Of course they can. Yep. But he can also be very good. And I think right now it looks more positive than negative going into the Euros.
So if it goes really badly and he can't control it because it's just a tournament. I mean, he's not doing this on the back of, on the back of like a friendly win against Holland that I was at where they were fine, but, you know, nothing to write home about. If they screw the pooch again and he goes back to Bayern, he still has his enemies at the club. He still has his enemies in the local media who are going to make fun of him and his skateboard and blah, 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 and his supposed arrogance and his love for Joshua Kimmich and whatever else. And then what? And he's got another mountain to climb again. I'm really surprised. I don't see...
So you're surprised by the fact that he's staying with Germany for longer?
Yeah, I am really surprised.
I think if he doesn't do well at the Euros, you give him a pass because he would have been in the job for less than a year. And you give him 2 more years to...
He's not built to be a national team manager.
But maybe he fans, maybe now he likes it. Maybe now he likes it. And he will still be young enough in 2026 to go to a big club after that.
I think he's got to wait for a whole generation to pass at Bayern. But as far as Bayern are concerned, so no Nagelsmann, no Xabi Alonso.
No.
What... They've been linked to Zidane again?
Yeah, Zidane, yeah.
The great stone face. Shortlist,
although no contact yet. Well, he's not keen on going either, to be fair. Ralf Rangnick is on the shortlist. Roberto Zerbi is on the shortlist. I think Sebastian Hoeneß would go if they were ready to pay off Stuttgart.
This worked so well when they paid off other clubs.
No, I know. Past, but
can you just, why would Zidane even consider this?
It's a massive club.
Well, why would they consider Zidane?
He's a massive coach.
He's a massive coach with one team in one context who's never shown any interest whatsoever about moving to Munich, who's got nothing at all to prove.
Yeah, that's true.
As a manager.
But that's why he's not really that keen either. He can't speak the language. He doesn't want to live in Munich.
So we're still stuck on Rangnick.
Deserve be.
But Rangnick as well is going to beat the Euros with Austria. So presumably, you know, that's all on hold again.
Yeah.
And the Zerbi, whose stock seems to go down with every minute that passes.
Yeah.
All right. Nice one.
And it's tricky for them. It is really. Getafe and Real Sociedad drew 1-1, but Javier Bordalas, the Getafe manager, is really unhappy, really angry about the abuse suffered by Mason Greenwood. Yeah, by the hands of the Real Sociedad fans, he's demanding that La Liga take action.
So, first of all, Javier Bordalas, who is La Liga's answer to Neil Warnock, should just be quiet. no, honestly, like
he's younger though.
Well, yeah, he's younger. He's like a young Neil Warnock. Secondly, the abuse that he was taking is fans shouting "rapist" at him. And look, this is the reality of the fact. You, Mason Greenwood, were investigated for a long time. Everybody heard the evidence.
Yeah,
and then you were never cleared. Right? They dropped the case because the woman who was going to testify against you decided not to testify. You were never cleared, and you never spoke about it. In those situations, when you don't have accountability, you don't take responsibility, you don't deny it and then have a court clear you, this is going to hang over him for the rest of his career. I'm assuming he's had this shouted at him ever since he returned to playing football.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming if he's still playing football, he's found a way to compartmentalize it and cope with it. And for Bordalas to use this as some kind of excuse and whatever, you're upsetting my players. No, I mean, this is the reality. We can't expect Liga to take action because this is, I'm not saying it's accurate, and I'm careful what I say. It is circumstantially substantiated by the fact that there were things that we all heard because the woman put it out there.
Yeah.
Right? And there was never a court of law in which he cleared it, and he never took accountability, took responsibility for it.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's it. And he has to live with this. It's just one of the side effects of playing football. If you're Greenwood and you're in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Jules, this is fresh in my mind because I've seen it happen with Emi Martinez and Andre Onana in the last few days. But does it make any sense to you that a keeper who gets booked during the penalty sequence doesn't get sent off, even if he's been booked earlier in the game?
I think it's hard. It's hard to send off a keeper during a penalty shootout.
So what's the point of booking him?
Well, because you book him to make, by principle, I guess, when he's having man games or he's too aggressive or wasting time or whatever.
It doesn't affect him at all.
No, but does giving a yellow for a goalkeeper in a game for wasting time to take a goal kick, that doesn't affect him either.
Because they don't get sent off for two yellows. Yeah. But you know what would affect them? And I think what they should do? If you get two yellows, if you get a yellow in the penalty sequence, you're suspended for the next game.
Yeah, if you already have a yellow. Idea, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you say, like, right, we don't want to turn the penalty sequence into a freak show.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do it and you allow the team to substitute in the reserve keeper if it's a second yellow in a penalty sequence.
Yeah.
Or you suspend him for the, or something like that. But it's got to mean something, right?
I think until Emi Martinez starting doing what he does, we've never really had that conversation. So I think that's why a lot of people didn't know the rule. That's why now a lot of people like us are talking about it and what we could do. Because until he created this like attitude to have before penalty shootouts and everything, we were never really in that position.
I think there's others who've done it in the past. I think all the way back to Bruce Grobbelaar.
Yeah, but that was just like moving his knees and legs, and you know.
But never to the extreme of this guy.
Dutch newspaper De Limburger has accused Cody Gakpo of being a slumlord. Gab, I'm not even sure what, to be honest with you, what a slumlord is.
So
I was not expecting this.
Is somebody who owns a bunch of cheap, low-quality properties that he rents out, rent, and doesn't look after them.
Right.
Now, I was very surprised. I was not expecting this because Cody Gakpo is, by all accounts, I mean, he's an evangelical Christian. He's a religious man. He's seen by most people as a nice guy. So to be very clear, I'm assuming that he's got a guy who manages his money and says, oh, yeah, look, real estate, good solution. And look, I can show you this much return and stuff. And Cody Gakpo, it's not like Cody Gakpo goes around the property, sees the mouse dropping and says, ha ha, you deal with it, right? But this newspaper, they went in there, they photographed, these things are in a really, really bad state. I'm sure Cody Gakpo will remedy it. Of course, they're denying this and there's going to be a legal case and whatever. It's bad publicity for him, but
yeah, terrible.
He can turn it into a good thing because, again, most people, I don't think he's necessarily the world's greatest footballer, but he is most people say he's a nice guy, he's an honest guy. He's a religious guy, and he'll be the first person who's going to want to remedy this. Jules, it's not impossible for the Premier League to get that fifth Champions League spot next season, but it's extremely difficult. So, what needs to happen? Since I know you love rules and regulations and stuff like that.
That's true. A lot of things need to happen, Gab. First of all, Aston Villa have to go all the way. And not just all the way, like, you know, on penalties.
Win the Conference League now.
They have to win every game. So the two semifinals against Fenerbahce or Fenerbahce.
Which I put that. And then the final against either Roma.
And then the final,
Roma.
Whoever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoever they face.
Not Roma, sorry. No, whoever they Fiorentina face. Or
Fiorentina or Club Brugge.
Yeah.
That has to happen for sure. And in the meantime, Aston Villa and English clubs also need one of the German teams. So either Bayern, Dortmund or Bayer Leverkusen to lose or draw one of their game.
Which is likely.
Which is very possible. It's possible, but it's also not possible. And also that the remaining French clubs, PSG and Marseille, have to lose one or more of their remaining games. So if PSG beat Dortmund twice and Marseille somehow beat Atalanta twice, then France would be in a very good position then to get an extra spot.
Well, unless they then lose in the final.
Yeah, unless they lose.
Well, so condition two is almost, it's highly likely, right?
Yeah, I mean, one.
Condition three is very likely.
Yeah.
It's condition one that's a tough one, but they're not out of the woods yet.
No, not
but it's weird because I see, like, I saw, like, oh, the probability supercomputer says there's a 1.5% chance of the Premier League getting the fifth spot. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, it's really all based on Villa winning all three games.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Maybe it's because it's Emery and he knows that he wins the first game, then the second game he's going to play for the draw.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. Yeah, what is it with Argentine keepers? Because Tigres Nahuel Guzman makes Emi Martinez seems normal before penalty shootout or during.
Yeah, I think this was actually during a game between Tigres and Monterrey. I don't know what the problem is with this guy.
It's not the first time we talk about him.
No, he played for Argentina too years ago. He's 38. He's injured. He's in the players' box. Monterrey are playing his team, Tigres, in just a big derby.
Yeah, massive.
And what does he do? He has a little laser pointer, and he points it at the opposition goalkeeper, Esteban Andrade, also at Sergio Canales. I mean, we've seen fans do this.
Yeah.
But, dude, I guess you're a fan now because you're injured, but...
That's mad, isn't it?
A modicum of professionalism.
That's terrible. Did he get like 11-game ban or something like that?
11-game ban, yeah. And rightly so. And rightly
yeah,
so.
Deservedly so.
Inter Miami give up an early goal to Nacho, but come back to win 3-1 as Lionel Messi scores twice and none other than Sergio Busquets adds another. Jules, 9 goals in his last 8 games for Lionel. And Inter Miami have the best record in MLS. Looks like a shrewd signing.
Yeah, who would have thought, hey, that the league would be too easy for him. Amazing. He looks sharp. We've said it since the start of the season. Really, he's had a few little niggles there and there. I mean, at his age, it's normal, I think. But when he's on form, when people around him play well, and Nashville are not. I mean, I was not really impressed, to be honest. Right. So I think there will be tougher games to come. But for now, it's a really good start of the season for them. So well done. Huge win for Leipzig away at Heidenheim, Gab, in the race for top 4 in Germany. But it wasn't so pleasant pregame for those Leipzig fans.
So first of all, on the game itself, Benjamin Sesko scored. And our man, Loïs Openda, 23 goals, I think, from the season, 23, 27. Yeah. I mean, quietly had a tremendous campaign. But the interesting thing is, what happened before the game? As everybody knows, Leipzig are about as popular as syphilis among football fans in Germany. And to welcome them, Heidenheim, well, somebody supposedly Heidenheim fans, but decided to go and put something called butyric acid over the seats.
Oh.
It's not acid, as in a sense, it doesn't burn you, nor will it get you high and you'll have a trip like Ken Kesey. No. It just has a really bad smell. It smells like a combination of sour milk and vomit.
Oh.
And they spread it all over the seats.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It may be disgusting. I personally think it's... I think it's funny. I think it's appropriate. I think it's a civil way to protest against these people.
Okay, yeah.
You know, is it welcoming? No, but...
You're all for it.
They have a lot of reasons not to welcome Leipzig. Jules, this brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday because we have midweek Premier League action.
Right.
Also, we might have a new Serie A champion as well.
That's
Milan and Inter in the Derby della Madonnina this evening. So join us on Thursday. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.